Welcome to Side Hustle City, and thanks for joining us. Our goal is to help you connect to real people who found success turning their side hustle into a main hustle, and we hope you can too. I'm Adam Kaler. I'm joined by Kyle Stevie, my co-host. Let's get started. All right, welcome back, everybody, to the Side Hustle City podcast. Unfortunately, Kyle Stevie is not with us today. He's with his family in Universal down in Orlando, having a good time. I'm a little chilly up here in Cincinnati, and it's probably, 80 degrees down in Orlando right now. So he gets to enjoy himself and his family down in Orlando for a change. And we do have a special guest with us today, Randy Rutledge. How you doing, Randy?
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks for having me.
And we talked a little bit before this. I think what Randy has in store for us is going to appeal to a lot of people on this podcast. So as everybody knows, you know, and Randy, we try to bring people opportunities that they may not be thinking about. I think one of the things that hold a lot of people back in their lives is just a lack of knowledge, a lack of understanding, a lack of knowing what's out there and what's available to them. And they, you know, kind of get stuck in this maybe 9-to-5 world or, you know, and they have one source of income and one thing to rely on. And I don't think a lot of people understand there's other things they could be doing. And you mentioned something to me earlier. Explain to this after five entrepreneurship.
Well, I said that I'm a serial after fivepreneur person, and that's a person that has a 9-to-5, but also works what you call a side hustle, right? I like it because it's not a full-fledged entrepreneur where you take on all the risk. And that means if the business succeeds, yay. But if it fails, the risks fall on you, the money, all of that. As an after fivepreneur, I can go in and out of different side hustles and evolve and determine whether or not I like this one or not. Is this something I feel like I can do for a longer period of time? I get to sample many things, learn so much about myself, and I'm not like tied down to one or another. So it just gives me flexibility. And myself, you and I, we're kind of high strung. We like to have multiple things going on at one time. So it keeps me interested.
I like that. I like that. And I think a lot of people don't want to, and this is just my experience, you know, this may not be true for everybody, but I feel like a lot of people, there's a huge fear of leaving the security of a 9-to-5 job. There's that 9-to-5 thing. They're like, oh, I don't know if I want to fully commit to something. This is kind of like a dip your toe in the water kind of thing, right?
Yes, yes, yes. Not only that, you can flip the mindset and the narrative about if I find a side hustle I really like, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to leave your 9-to-5. It all depends on you. If you're that person, yes, you could dip your toe in, sample, evolve, improve, and get it to a point you can scale it. But if you're not that person, which is like me, I want the security of my 9-to-5 because as we talked earlier, Adam, I have an older mother. She depends on those weekly checks. I wouldn't want some uncertainty to come in and then affect what my mom uses those, you know, funds for. So that's me. That's what I like. So I've had a number of after five positions. And one of the things that I do for people that would like to become an after fivepreneur, I help them crystallize their business ideas so they can pick one. Because most people that want to become an after fivepreneur or even a full-fledged entrepreneur, they have so many ideas because of their expertise, they have a hard time picking one. Mm-hmm. But I use a skill of brainstorming to help you pick one, get started, evolve, and then determine how you can put other areas that you want to infuse into there.
I love this. This is so perfect for people. I mean, especially people who don't have a safety net necessarily, like, you know, or in your case, you've got somebody, other people you're responsible for, you know?
Yes.
And talk a little bit about your background here. I mean, you said you grew up in a household and you were the only girl in a household of a lot of boys.
Yeah. Well, I'm originally from Jersey, Newark, New Jersey. I was born there. I had six brothers. I'm the only girl. And just looking at how my brothers engage with the world, it took a lot of fear out of my mind. And the funny thing, my name is Randy Rutledge, and all my brothers, they had male names. But because my mother named me Randy, most people thought when I came for a job that they were going to see a guy. And then they saw me. And then we didn't go into it, Adam, but I've been in technology since the 80s, a programmer. I've been in healthcare. Right now, I teach health informatics for several universities, data science, machine learning. And that's my side hustle, the online adjunct where I teach for universities. And then I have another side hustle. Well, it's called Singletree Media, where I do various live streams and video on demand for people in the ministry and even my husband, because he's a pastor. But your question about brothers, I was the second. So I learned how to be tough. I learned how not to fear trying something new, like swinging on a tree and all these other things they had me doing, you know? And so I think maybe I use that when it comes to business. I'm not afraid of trying something, you know, and giving it a certain amount of time. And then if it doesn't pan out, you know, I scrap it and move on to the next idea that might be germinating in the back of my head.
I love the live stream thing, because I have a friend, he actually just sold, him and his wife, they just sold their ministry video streaming company. It's called Live. StreamSpot. StreamSpot. Oh, wow. And they sold it to a bigger company. And, you know, now they're just enjoying their lives. You know, he's mentoring now other startups and things like that. But it's really, really interesting, especially in the time, you know, in COVID and all this other stuff, people haven't been able to get to service. So, you know, the video streaming services have gotten, I mean, they've blown up. I mean, what's your experience with that?
Well, interestingly enough, I was doing the online adjunct. So the online adjunct is where I teach people who train face-to-face how to flip it to online. So when COVID came, I got a lot of customers asking me, show me how to create an online course. When I was doing that, I had a company to come to me and say, hey, can you create online courses to put on live streams where people can get them, or they're on video demand? I said, sure, I'll try it. So they put me in for a grant, Adam. I didn't think nothing about it. 5 months later, they give me a call, say, you won the grant. And I was like, well, what is it? They're like, we're going to build all your apps, Fire, Roku, Android, Apple, all the apps for you to teach online and stream online. I was just like, I didn't know anything about how to do it, even though I have a technology background. So I was like on the internet, I was reading, getting books and doing everything. I was just like, oh my God, I don't even know what this is. Then he says, we're going to build these apps. We're going to give you your own media station. You can call it what you want. And this is the monthly fee we're giving you lifetime, because we're giving you the grant. And I was holding my head the whole time I'm talking to him, just like I'm talking to you. I'm like, I know I should not let this opportunity go. I don't know what it is, but yes. And I just went for it. And now it's 2 years later. It's called Singletree Media. One of my apps is called faithtv.lightscast.com, and we get viewership even from Pakistan, Korea. The ministry is being seen. Now, we're not millions and millions of people are not viewing us, but, you know, I could care less about the numbers as long as the message hits who it needs to hit.
Exactly. Yeah, that's perfect. And that's awesome that you were able to, like, you put yourself in a position to get that grant, though. I think a lot of people, they see those opportunities and they think, oh, there's no way I'm going to get it. Like, there's no way I can do it. There's no way I'm going to get this. Like, I might as well not even waste my time on it. But then you were blessed with this awesome opportunity and took advantage of it. Where's the company?
You know what it was? I didn't know what it was, and I didn't know what I was supposed to do. And all I could hear in my head was, give it to me first. And I'm thinking, like, how do you give a live stream? I don't even know what that was. I was up day and night. This studio that you see behind me is the studio that I developed after learning and reading all these different things. And there's a hanger. You can't see it, but we put the ministry name is in the back. I took it down because I didn't want to have it, you know, showing
that's all right.
I made this studio, the lighting that you see, I didn't know anything, Adam. I thank God for the opportunity. And I said, I have to work and show him I am faithful.
Yes. And some people don't, you know, some people can't let go and just put their lives in the hands of something that, you know, they may not know how these things turn out, but it works out. Yes. I mean, you're a capable person. You're smart. Yes. You've been in IT. You understand the industry. You know, you're prepared for it, you know?
You don't know it, though.
Yeah. But sometimes I think people, you know, they don't really trust in themselves. They don't trust in, you know, what's going on around them. I think people just need to have faith that things will work out. You know, I mean, if you put yourself in the position where, you know, you're able to benefit or you're able to take advantage of these opportunities that come your way, it's just going to work out, you know. And I think people get scared to make moves. But it sounds like, I mean, even you've got a great like 9-to-5 thing that you've got going on. And I mean, if you're teaching, you're helping the kids, you're teaching them how to learn, you're teaching them, you know, what's coming, what's the next generation, what's that new next thing that they should be prepared for. But you're actually doing it. You're a living vessel of success that you can show them, hey, I'm not just telling you to do this.
Yes.
I've done it. Like here
and
I am.
Also speaks that you got life. Mm-hmm. Your life, you're not defined by your 9-to-5.
No.
Or your identity is not tied to your job, that there's this whole space and this whole part of you that is, I wrote a book called Soul Seed. It just came out and it talks about how you have this other part of you that wants to grow and that wants to blossom. That's what I use. And that's what I gear my 9-to-5 entrepreneur stuff with. After 5.
So tell me more about this book, because didn't it just come out November 1st? Is that what?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Tell me more about this book. I want to hear what people are going to learn in this book.
Are you tired of feeling lost in the world of trading and investing? Get informed and inspired with the Talking Trading podcast. I'm Louise Bedford, and I'll help you navigate the markets like a pro. Tune in each week and subscribe now at talkingtrading.com.au or on your favourite podcast app, or check out the link in the show notes. Talking Trading, this is how traders excel.
Well, it really just talks about, you know, how we all get kind of shuffled into the masses to get a 9-to-5, get the perfect house, the perfect wife, the perfect job, the perfect kids. And you're supposed to automatically be happy, but you're not. And I just talk about how when you were young, you had these curiosity on things, and you every day you woke up and did everything you wanted to do. You hung out with your friends, you did the things you enjoyed, but we always pack that away once we start to get grades. You get in grammar school and high school, you're supposed to get the grades to get in the right college. And we just start being, here we are like this as a kid. And the world and our world just gets narrower and narrower and narrower. And so the book is telling you how to rekindle that curiosity, how to look at your life and understand that that path doesn't necessarily have the path you need for the soul seed that's inside of you. So I'll step aside from that. We're all seeds that are planted in this reality, right? I mean, we're not a tree, which if you plant it in dirt, it's going to sprout. You can see the tree. You can see its leaves, its roots. We don't have that ability to demonstrate leaves and roots and trees and branches. It's how we live our life and we express it through our talents and our gifts. And when we nurture those and allow them to blossom, they help us create the success of life for ourselves and those around us. And so the book just kind of walks you through what are the issues, why you got to this point, how it tells you to let go of your path, you know, the past, and don't worry about people's expectations, and just kind of gently lead you to a point where you can recommit to yourself and who you were designed to be, you know?
I love that. You know who else would love that? My wife. She's all about that kind of stuff. She's all about learn how to place boundaries. Like, that's a big thing with her, is putting boundaries in place so that people know where you stand and where they can take, you know, things with you and where they can't. And your time commitments, very important. Yes. Things yes. like that. And I mean, I'm sure, I mean, you're probably on podcasts all the time now, and you know, with all this success and everything. And
no, Adam, I want to congratulate you. You are my first podcast.
What? How?
You're my first. I've never gone on any.
Oh, wow. Well, you're a great podcast guest. So well, you should be on more you. For sure. But I mean, you know, you got a good story. I think it's good to talk about this stuff. I mean, you're spreading a positive message that people, an encouraging message that people need to hear. And, I think say I'm the first podcast you're on this Side Hustle City, but you know, you're probably in demand. I mean, you've written a book that takes time. You've got a full-time job that takes time. You're doing other things. Yeah. I mean, managing your time is a big part of being an entrepreneur.
Yes. And you know what else? I'm back in school, even though I have an MBA and a PhD, I'm back in school because I'm in a medical school. I wanted to relearn health informatics. Now that we have all this data from electronic health records, I wanted to reinvigorate my statistics and my data science and health informatics. So I'm back in school for that. So I'm even doing that, which is like, most people.
Wait a minute.
Like,
so you got an IT background, you got a full-time job, you wrote a book. You got a master's and a PhD. I mean, you got your PhD. What's your master's and you got an MBA, right? So
yes.
What was the focus on your business? Was it marketing? Was it economics? Like what was your focus?
Actually, it was consulting, which is interesting because I used to work for Deloitte Consulting and Accenture and Bearing Point. So I wanted to make sure that I knew, you know, all the aspects of business, but it was mostly leadership. But what's interesting is I could have got my PhD in 3 years in business, but I got it in conflict analysis and resolution.
Oh.
And when I got that PhD, my sales skyrocketed because I was able to hone in on what are the issues that my client is having? Who are the decision makers? Who are the influencers? What was the roadblocks or the, you know, cogs in the wheel. And I was able to just understand conflict on multiple levels, from leadership to gender to whether it was business or legal issues or political issues. I could see it on so many levels and it helped my sales. I was selling millions and millions of dollars of work as a consultant at Deloitte.
Wow. I can't believe, like, they must have been sad when you left.
Well, actually, I transitioned to the government, so that
there you go. Yay. Yeah. What can they do?
My boss.
What can they do? Wait a minute. So why aren't you a politician? Like, you should. You know,
my dad used to say that. He was like, Randy, you should go into politics. And I was like, Dad, no, I'm not. Forgive me. I don't want to be biased, but I'm not that person. I'm not that person that if I come to you, I'm ethical, I'm genuine. And then in the back room, I got to cut a deal. And then I can't smile in front of my constituents.
And that's what's necessary if you're in politics. You have to understand how things work behind the scenes, you know, and probably suck it up a lot of times and deal with things that you may not think are super ethical, but it's just part of the game.
I can't have two faces. I won't be able to sleep. And I feel like if I go down that road, I can't come back from that. Then who am I, Adam?
Yeah, I got the same problem. I can't really serve two masters. Like I can't be I just can't be fake like that. it's tough. And I ran for mayor. I was 4 signatures short because I here you got to get 500 signatures, but you got to get 1,000 to get 500, you know? And, it was during the blizzard. I had my poor wife out there in the snow and the cold last year in January and February, trying to get these signatures. And, the pandemic was just going on. So we were like trying to go into Kroger and get like get signatures, and they kept kicking us out because you're not allowed to do it there. So we have 4 signatures short. I ended up, but you know, the more I learned about, you know, what it would take to get elected and the money you have to raise and who you have to raise it from and stuff like that, it started rubbing me the wrong way, you know? And, yes. And then, you know, I had people calling me from the Democratic Party and, you know, I was an independent Republican Party, and they were telling me, they were calling me, leaving me messages on how to be a better Democrat, like how to properly be a Democrat, how to properly be a Republican. I'm like, man, what do you mean? Like, what are they teaching me? Like, what are they going to tell you? Like, here's how it works. Like, you need to just follow whatever we say.
Yeah.
And you can't make your own decisions. It is. It's a gang. No, it's a gang. It's a Bloods and the Crips out here.
I was thinking that, but I didn't say it. Glad you said it.
Yeah, it's a Bloods and the Crips out here is what it is. That's why they chose red and blue.
That's just not me. You know? I don't want to be jumped in and killed out.
Yeah, exactly. That's what you got to. I know there's probably some guys back there like, all right, now it's time for your initiation. Yeah, you get jumped. Yeah. Oh man, I can't be on that.
No, but getting killed out. No.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, you got to deal with all these problems, and everybody wants to point the finger at you, like you're the reason you did that. So I don't blame you for not jumping into that. I mean, I think you're, you know, academia helping out the government, or you know, in a different way, helping out the government.
Yes.
Helping people find, you know, their true passion and leading a life where they feel fulfilled outside of just their 9-to-5 job. I mean, I think that's commendable. And I think you're going down the right path. I just can't believe you got all these, man, it's just like one thing after another. You keep, the longer I talk to you, the more things you got that you've accomplished. It's insane.
Well, you know, I don't watch a lot of TV and do things that waste time. So I figure my time out, you know, even for my exercise, which I jog in the pool out there, just with a little, it's an aqua jogger, and I can jog in the pool, and that's where I get my exercise.
Oh, so that's good.
I have to fit in the things that are important to me. And I might watch a movie every now and then with my husband. He want to see a movie, it, you know, in here, and we'll watch a movie, but I'm not just sitting there just wasting my time like that.
Yeah, that's what I said. So you haven't seen Squid Games yet? You haven't seen that? Took me a while to see it.
We binged on that and saw it in one night.
Okay.
Because I was like, you know, I got things to do. Oh my God, the ending, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild. It's funny because, you know, you think about that kind of stuff, you're like, man, does that actually, like, there's probably something going on out here floating around. Like, somebody's probably doing something like this, you know, and yeah. It kind of scares you. And it's that whole dystopian type of world that, you know, you didn't know exists, but everybody in the back of their mind fears that might be like a real thing or whatever.
Yes. But, well, the world is big and we all perceive the world and engage with it differently. So you don't know what people do in other countries and what's allowed. And you don't know what's allowed in America in militia groups and different, you know, groups. What are their policies and practices? We just don't know.
Yeah, you don't know. And I think one thing, too, is, you know, the way things are, you know, politically in the United States, and since you're a conflict resolution person, you're, you know, there's just so much ignorance like out here, and people are so confident in their ignorance.
Yes.
It's wild. And they don't consider what other people's perspectives are, in my opinion.
That's
like they're
choice.
Right. Yeah, they're right. Everyone else is wrong. But they're so confident in it. Like, what is going on there?
Well, I mean, if you live in a space where once you believe something, it transcends from just the words into a narrative that you become loyal to. And so then it's not so much the words, it's the loyalty you have toward that concept. And people are thinking that it's only what the people are saying. No, you're missing it. They're loyal to it now. It's transcended in their life. So that's why they're confident, because they have become loyal to it. And you're not going to remove loyalty that easy by giving them a new narrative.
I feel like
it just doesn't work like that.
I feel like some of this is replaced. Some people replace politics with religion. Like the religion is now politics.
Yes,
and exactly. But it's empty. You know, it's like this empty thing. Like, what do you get out of that? Like, does it really help you?
Yes. Think about it. Think if you're part of a church in your neighborhood and you give and you're there, people know you go there. They know what seat you sit in. You get respect in a way, and people, they align you with, or you become identified with that. Now transition to that, to politics. Yeah, I'm a part of this party, and this is what we believe. We have power, or we're regaining our power. And to be a part of that is to have your identity coupled with that. And so people want to be associated with things that make them look bigger than the Jim or the Mary or the Bob that has a small little house on the corner and, you know, those types of things. It helps them kind of gravitate toward the bigger view of themselves because they're part of this other big view.
That makes sense. They may be unfulfilled in their own lives.
Yes.
So they need to attach themselves.
They need some entrepreneur stuff.
See, this is what I say. And I don't know where you live now. Where do you live now? Are you still in Jersey?
I'm in Sarasota.
Oh, okay. Beautiful. Okay. I've seen them plants back there. I was like, she must be somewhere tropical. But
I'm in Sarasota and we're on a 7-acre ranch. And so we are a little away from everyone, and we get to, everyone here has a ranch. You probably heard of it. Mayaca Valley Ranch.
Yeah.
So it's
okay.
About 300 ranches here. So
nice.
We have one.
My wife and I just bought a place. It's meant to be a short-term rental. It's a condo down in Miami. So right by, Port of Miami. So it's like closest, it's going to be the closest place you can rent, hotel type of situation you can rent if you're going to go do a cruise ship. So, and it's in a really good spot. It's like right in the middle, it's downtown. So it's right in the middle of, Wynwood, which is, you know, the arts district and stuff like that.
Yes.
And, Brickell, which is where, you know, the white collar people hang out and, you know, fancy, you know, restaurants,
the ports easy, right?
And you can get the ports easy. Yeah. Oh yeah. It's in a really, really, I mean, I could walk across the street and be at a Miami Heat game, you know?
Wow.
So, and now they're building a train right behind this place. It's the Bright Line, right? It already exists, but it's going to go all the way to Tampa. From Miami. And it's going to drop you off at Disney Springs on the way. So you could stop.
So I'm not too far from Tampa. So that's good to know.
Yeah. You can get down to Miami in like 4 hours, maybe, you know? So really, yeah. Really good. I mean, and you know, I love Florida, but, you know, back to this, this thing, the being part of something bigger than you are. I see a lot of sports fans like that. And you have people in Cincinnati and, you know, we got the Bengals. So Bengals are kind of like, you know, disappointing. So you got people here that are Steeler fans, even though they never stepped foot in the city of Pittsburgh, right? So I say these are the type of people that would steal money from their mom's purse. Like, they're not loyal, right?
That's not right.
This is what I tell them. And I say, those are the type of people that, you know, live in a city but root for another city because they want to feel like they're a part of something bigger, right?
And
I always... Or they don't find success in their own lives, so they have to tie themselves to some other thing that is successful and makes them feel like a part of that winning. So if they're winning, if the team is winning all the time, you could say, "Oh, I'm a fan. I've been a fan for 10 years. You know, I'm a loyal fan." And you know, so I get the whole politics thing because it happens in sports too. I think, you know.
Yes. But then they can be part of a conversation they might not even be part of. Think about it. If you're not part of that conversation, you're not associated with that. You could be looking over there at the water cooler and everybody's talking about it, but you can't even get in with a word.
Yeah.
But if you're part of it, then you're in and you're associated and you feel some kind of way, like, you know, you have this self-actualization, this feeling about yourself that's not like, you're not like, oh, I'm part of that group, so I'm feeling pretty good about myself. It's just all intrinsic.
Yeah.
You feel it inside, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I believe that. How do we get people to feel excited about being an entrepreneur? How do we get them excited about getting out and building something in their community that may not exist?
They have to know what entrepreneur is more so than how it's being advertised or the narrative around it. Most people see entrepreneurship with either they're really, really struggling or they just hit it big, you know, but it's a journey. And I think it's more about discovering you and your talents and what you can give to the community and how you can make things better. And I think if they have that or they want to grow that, they can be part of an entrepreneurship journey. And that could be they work with someone else who's an entrepreneur or they come into a startup and do some work. They have to get an opportunity to experience it so they know what it is and not so much what people are saying. Because when you know what it is, you can't put it down when you create a business and something goes.
Oh, it's a problem. Like, I got a problem now. I can't. It's like an addiction. It's crazy. I mean, yeah. I mean, this is good because, you know, I come from an alcoholic family and I've never drank before. So this is like my alcohol, right? This is my addiction. I got an addictive personality, and it's like the positive thing to be addicted to. You know what I'm saying? Like, but
you funneled it into the right way so you get the right outcome.
Yeah. You got to understand yourself. Have you ever done your Myers-Briggs?
Yes. I used to give that as a consultant. I don't know what my four is, my little stuff now is, but I used to give all the different types of assessments.
Enneagrams and all that. Yeah. I think that's really powerful. And I've found it overall to be true for a lot of people. Like, I'm an ENTP. So I'm the debater is what they call me. So I like to get into stuff sometimes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I forgot what my alphabets are, but I'm the analytical person. I could be a statistician or someone who works in research, but I also am the innovator.
You are the smart one.
The vision.
I know the one you are. Yep.
You have a vision, but you can't make that concept reality. So I bring ideas to light.
Yes.
In a tangible way.
I love it. Yes. So I'm the kind that constantly comes up with ideas, but I flip so many times. Like I never stop with one thing because there's always a new shiny object that I go after. Right. I'm like, I've got this great idea and it would work if I stopped to actually do it, you know? But then I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Now there's this new thing. Oh no, I want to do this next one, you know?
Yes.
So I need
a partner, like for you and I, for the way, and this is how my bosses were when I was a consultant. I partnered with people that had many ideas, but just could not operationalize them. I'm the operationalizer.
Oh, you are the person I need. I need like five of you. I got five ideas right now that I know are going to, I got one thing, the Kool-Aid spoon. I want to make this spoon out of compressed Kool-Aid. I lived on Kool-Aid when I was a kid. So you take this spoon and you just compress, like you make it, it's Kool-Aid, it's like sugar and Kool-Aid, right? But it compressed into the spoon shape and you could just put it in a pack and just send off to school with kids. And, you know, they get the water and then boom, Kool-Aid.
Just stir it up.
Kool-Aid spoon, see?
That's pretty good. That could be a TikTok too, you know?
It could be. You never know. It could jump off. So yeah. So how did, so speaking of personality types, I think a lot of times, you know, these personality types that we have, you know, understanding the personality types and understanding the people around you and the people that work with you, their personality types, you know, it could help you to be successful and avoid like conflicts in an organization. Do you have any experience with that? I mean, what have you found out by mixing maybe conflicting personality types in organizations?
Well, I've actually experienced it myself. I mean, on two sides. So from a personal perspective, I would not get under a boss that I knew was a person or they had characteristics or behaviors that they never communicated. And so if I was doing something that they didn't like or I wasn't meeting expectations, they would be the kind of one that what I call you strike your performance review with a pen instead of saying, hey, Randy, you know, that what you did over there, that wasn't working. So if I knew that was that kind of person, I never would get on a project with a person like that, because I was aware of how they communicated or the lack thereof. Now, when I flip it to my teams, I used to look at the team members I had, their ethnicity, their gender, you know, background, and then I would watch them just to see how they actually perform, what are their habits and their tactics. And based on that, I would modify my behavior towards them as far as if I'm trying to manage them, if I want to encourage them, if I need to instruct them or train them. I knew a way to approach them. So, for example, I had a team of developers that were from India, and I knew that they all every day would have coffee, chai tea in the break room in the morning and in the evening. So if I really wanted to communicate with them, I needed to come in and commune with them during chai tea time. Then they would accept me if I wanted to say, you know, there's something that's not going right. I could discuss it during tea time. And so it's a community that I could say, you know what? I have this problem. I wouldn't point out who it was. I've said, I have this problem that we need to do with our development. We're not going about it in the right way. The other thing is they were males. And I know You know, we all have this sense of, you know, women want to be, and don't get me wrong, I'm saying women want to be equal and we want to do this and that. But growing up with, you know, the six brothers, I could use those tactics by saying, I have a problem. I present the problem to them and let them, even though I knew what the answer was, I knew what I was looking for, I would let them come up with the answer. And then when they came up with the answer, I would allow them in the meeting to be the one to discuss.
It's almost like a macho ego thing kind of thing that they got going on. I mean, see, you got to be realistic about this stuff, though. Like, people act like, oh, no, everybody's the same. Nobody's different. But it's true. And if you want to live in that world where everybody, you know, nobody acts the same and testosterone doesn't affect human beings differently, then you could live in that world. But personally, I need to learn about it and I need to know how it affects people's personalities so that I can be a more effective leader.
Yes.
And that's pretty much what you're saying.
Yes. When you know what is true in some instances, lean into that instead of pulling back.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt you to step aside and add more oxygen to the room so others can feel a sense. Think about the community when they're having tea and how they feel. They all would bring one piece of food, like one would bring rice, one would bring meat and whatever when it came for lunch. They were a community. So to come into their community and say, I have a problem, and let the community solve that problem, everyone save face. Everyone saves face in that instance.
It's a win-win.
I never pointed out who it was.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I'm quite sure they knew who it was because they worked together as developers.
Well, you also don't want to be the person who points fingers and upsets someone. And then that person leaves the company because now they've been, you know, they can't save face. Everybody looks at them now like they're incompetent. And then they're like, look, I'm just going to go somewhere else. Well, now you don't have your team. Now you got to retrain someone.
Yes.
And get them up to speed. Startups and entrepreneurship in general, so much of it is people and teams.
Yes.
It's 100%. I mean, if I'm investing in a company or I'm starting a new business, you know, the idea could be okay. I mean, in most cases, you've probably seen it. A lot of companies change, they pivot, right? They change their idea, they do something differently. But that team is what you really want to invest in, because are these people that are going to be able to do that? Or are these people that think their idea is the greatest in the world and they're just, you know, they're going to stick with that until it, you know, dies and burns, you know? So how have you dealt with that? I mean, with like building teams and putting the right people in place, and talk a little bit about, if I'm an entrepreneur and I'm starting out and I'm maybe building a tech company, you know, what do I look for? What do I try to do?
Well, I would say, number one, you want to have a strategy, first of all, before you even start to think about bringing on a team. And hopefully you have a strategy in the very beginning. And that strategy talks about how you're putting your mission and your vision together. What are the objectives? What are the goals, whether it's from 1 year to 3 years to 5 years, that you're trying to accomplish? And if you're a solopreneur and you're doing this on your own, you have to pan out and plan out how you're going to start bringing on team members and what is going to be their role. What do you need right now in your company for a team member? So that's a strategy for that. And then as you bring on, you know, individuals, if you're not sure, I'd say bring them on in a project, on a project base. Do not hire them straight out. Bring them on as a project base.
Great idea.
Then the project has a beginning and an ending date. If things didn't work out, you're not firing anybody. You're just like, you know what? The project is over, and you can see whether that person is a fit, right? In many ways.
Well, now people don't go out and badmouth you either. And you don't need that when you're a small company. You don't need somebody going out, well, oh, Randy was hard to work with, and Randy said this to me, and Randy told me I wasn't doing this right, and I know I do this right. You know, you didn't want that drama.
Yes.
Like, and scaring people off, you know? I mean, that's kind of a lot of stuff that people deal with. That is a great strategy.
Yes. Project-based is always good because the person knows that they're there for this project, and they really have to shine. And that motivates them. Oh, I'm here for this project. This project is only 30 days, 60 days. I really like this company. I want to continue to work with them. Then you really got to pull out all the stops and you got to do above and beyond what you're doing for the project and your hourly rate, right? You got to shine and let them know you really want to be there. And that's how you bring on people that you know want to be there. They show that throughout the project, right?
Oh, of course. Well, when I worked in corporate, I wasn't a big fan of the corporate world. I worked in ad agencies, right? And the smaller ones I loved, you know, and the bigger ones I didn't hate. But you just felt like you were a number. You were a person that was just there to consume hours and bill the client, right?
Yeah.
And you keep track of your hours and you get your 37 and a half billable hours in that you had to get in, right? If you didn't, you'd get a talking to, right? So you had to get them 37 and a half hours. So, you know, and when it came time to get a raise, you just got a inflationary raise, your 3% or whatever, which right now wouldn't even matter because inflation's 5.5%, probably going up.
Yeah, we were just talking about that. You better buy your turkey now because inflation, they're going to raise the prices.
They're going, oh, get that meat. Oh, I tried to go to the store. Boy, the roast beef. Look, I was at the deli and I'm looking at this roast beef. I lift it up. I'm like, why are there like five slices of roast beef in here for $8?
Yeah,
it was going crazy.
Yeah, it's going up.
Yeah,
I'm a fish eater. I stopped eating meat 7 years ago.
There you go. I don't know what it is with me. I'm just, if I eat fish, it's going to be shrimp or tuna or something like that. Yeah,
those are two of my favorites.
Yeah, probably two of the things that probably got something too much mercury or something in them that I'm not supposed to be eating, but they're the tastiest.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, I mean, you got to convert over. You got to move. I mean, it's crazy how much money this stuff has gone up. But like, think about that. You're working at a place. They give you this 3% inflationary raise. You're not even keeping up with inflation. And it's just, it's not you. It's the whole team. If the whole team or if your leadership doesn't bring in more business, you're affected. You could have killed it. Like, you could be on salary working 60 to 80 hours a week for these people, busting your back, and you still get that 3%. It doesn't matter. You know, they'll give you a nice, you know, words and say, oh, you know, maybe we'll give you a title increase, right?
You know, straight line title. That's it. Right?
Yeah. Nobody. Yeah. But they gave you that title increase because the last person that had that title, they gave a 3% raise to and they were out. So now they're just like, oh, we'll give you a title increase because we got to replace the person that just left. So, you know, it's not even really that. They're just trying to fill that position. So, you know, it's one of those weird things where, you know, you have zero control over that, right? You have no control over really what happens to you there. You could try to work hard and you should because you should have a good work ethic in general, right?
Yes.
But as an entrepreneur, you have control.
Yes.
But you also... I feel like when you're an entrepreneur, even if you go in there and you're working at this company, you're going to give maybe 80% of what you're capable of doing. And you may not even discover what you're really capable of doing. When you become an entrepreneur, the game changes. You work 80 hours a week because you want to.
Yes.
And you're not working to make someone else rich. Yes, you feel alive.
You know?
Yes. Yes. And you're not working to make somebody else rich, right? You're a cog in the wheel at one of these big companies. And I'm not down on anybody wants to work at a big company. You want to work at a big company and you want that security and you, some people function really well in that environment. But as an entrepreneur, if you go into that environment, you don't even have to do your Myers-Briggs. Go work at a big company. And if you're not happy, you might be an entrepreneur.
Yeah, well, you might be an entrepreneur stuck if you don't have ideas and, you know, the time and the vigor and the motivation to start, you know, working on something of your own. Like you were talking about earlier, people get scared or they're afraid. They don't want to try anything. And so they just feel sad and feel stuck. And, you know, that stuff messes with your health as well as your mental, you know, status and everything, you know?
Yes. Yes, definitely. I mean, talk about, and I think what you're doing is, so if I discover this is the type of person I am, I'm at this corporation, I'm not being treated fairly in my opinion, you know, or I see the forest for the trees, right? I could see what's happening. Why? Hey, I might not be being treated unfairly. I'm just a cog in the wheel.
Yes.
I want to do some entrepreneurial stuff after Fivepreneur.
That's right.
That's where that fits in.
That's right.
How do I get started? I've discovered this. How do I get started? How do I, what do I do? What's the next step? I mean, maybe what did you do?
Well, first of all, I look at what's my expertise, right? What am I an expert in, or what have I been doing for years, or what I do, even if I didn't get paid for? What is my passion? And then I start to look at what problems are out there, or what problems are trending that customers or people or businesses are having that I could plug what I do into. And so then I start to think about, how could I demonstrate that I have this skill and ability? And so I start finding opportunities to demonstrate that. It could be at the job I have now. Maybe there's a project or something. They are not aware that I'm trying to hone that skill or develop an approach to how I could, you know, market a certain skill or monetize that. And that's what you're doing. You're developing a process for doing this expert thing you know how to do. Because once you know the approach, step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, this is the outcome, this solves that problem, then you want to find a way to automate that. Or you might create a class, or you might create a mastermind. You might do webinars where you sell maybe an ebook, or sell something that you can show people how to go from A to Z using your 5-step process or something like that. So you start to, you know, outline that idea in chunks, taking a person from one space to another space. And you might be able to sell those chunks separately or together. But how do you get people to know that you can do it? You have to begin to demonstrate that you can do that. And once you demonstrate that, you start to find opportunities in social media or in your church or other areas to get the word out about it. So then people can say, oh, hey, you know what? I need this. Can you help me do such and such? So you start to advertise, or you start to create small videos of you doing this, or solving problems, or talking about it. The other thing is you might want to create what they call a persona, or someone that you could, you know, detail all the demographics about that person, who they are, this person that has that problem. So then when you talk about it, you advertise, or you solve problems and create videos, it's like you're talking to one person. And so it sounds a little more personal. So There's a whole lot of stuff that gets into that with the marketing and this and that. But, you know, that's kind of sort of what I did. I am very good at brainstorming and helping people crystallize hundreds of ideas down into a list, and then prioritizing them. And then from there, let's pick one. How are we going to make this real in this reality? How does this solve this problem? What touch points? Where's the customer at? What are they experiencing? How are we going to change that? How do we talk about that? How do we show them that, you know? And so that's kind of sort of how you start. Start with your expertise.
Wow. Yeah, you should have worked at Procter & Gamble. This is what they do all day. They invented They invented marketing, but they put a lot of money into consumer testing, you know, Talking, breaking it down. Like, you know, what's the customer journey right now? How do they buy the product? You know, what makes them go to the store to even think about buying this product? You know, what's going, you know, they go through all that. I mean, that's exactly what you described. But you're also telling the entrepreneur, you know, you're a subject matter expert in something.
Yes.
What are you a subject matter expert in? You know, growing up with 6 brothers, you're a subject matter expert in that.
You got that.
And
right.
In New Jersey. And in New Jersey on top of that, man, they must have been getting into it.
Are you
the youngest? Are you the oldest? Are you in the middle?
I'm the second. I'm the second from the oldest.
Yes. Oh, so you had to babysit too on top of that.
Somewhat, but you know, they were all bigger than me, taller, and so it was just a lot of rough housing. But where I came in is they never wanted to work or clean up or do stuff. And I'd be like, okay, 30 minutes, mom is going to be home. You already know what you got to do. You got to make the beds. You got to clean the bathroom. I'm going to do the dishes. You take out the trash. I would tell them what to do. And then I said, then you can go back to your life. And they were like, all right. You know, they listened to me when it came to getting things done.
So no other girl in the neighborhood wanted to mess with you, because you had to grow up with 6 brothers. So you probably had hands.
Yeah, they didn't. Even sometimes my brothers, I got them too. And then I'm ex-military. I went to the military.
Oh, that on top of that.
I went three years in the military and worked in as a PAC specialist, you know, personal specialist for people coming and going from the military. And I helped them with their careers after the military with their educational benefits. So I've always been kind of teaching and mentoring and showing people how to do it for just forever, you know?
This is interesting because I'm telling you, God works in mysterious ways. I just got off the phone with my buddy Jan. He's up in Cleveland, or he's in Akron, and he runs a marketing agency, and he's trying to figure out how to niche down, right? And for people that don't know that, you don't want to really try to start a business in a really big market. You want to target a smaller customer because it's going to narrow your market spend and your marketing spend and all that stuff. And he spent a lot of years in the Air Force, and he's thinking about helping military people when they come out. They want to be entrepreneurs. How do they find resources? How do they find money? Is there something, you know, SBA or the VA offers, and then help them create their brand? That's what he really specializes in. And he's got a process for that, but it's how do I help them figure out first, what do they want to do? Or maybe they know what they want to do, but how do I help them create this brand? How do I get their logo together? How do I help them figure out the personas of their customers and what does the customer want? So he does all that stuff. And it's funny that you're talking about this now, because I literally had that conversation 2 hours ago.
Oh yeah. It's very interesting when you work with veterans and then anyone, because these concepts we're talking about, you were in advertising, people can't wrap their mind about why do I need to create a fake person so I could talk to as I market, you know, they don't get that, you know, but you have to demonstrate it in interesting ways. And, I feel like I'm rambling because I'm thinking of it as the same time I'm trying to talk about it. You have to actually put them in a position to where they can see and understand what you're saying. And that you can't do that with all the normal jargon that's out there on YouTube. And this is what you do. You do this and do that. No, you got to make it plain, and you have to make it connect with the person, and especially veterans, because they're very regimented in their approach to things, very systematic and that kind of thing. So it's going to be very interesting to see how your friend does that. Yeah. I like to know how he
yeah,
works
exactly.
That out.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we just thought of this while he kind of, you know, put his toe in the water a little bit with that, but you know, he never thought that that could possibly be his business. You know, and I'm like, I don't know, man. There's a lot of people coming out of the military every year. I mean, you've got, you know, and if you can identify that and you can be the go-to for that, I mean, there's some money to be made there. Plus, it's fulfilling. You know, a lot of veterans, they struggle with how do my military skills translate into, you know, the real world? How do these things move over? And a lot of people go into construction and stuff like that, obviously. You know, because they're process oriented. They probably had to build some stuff while they were in the military, camps and things like that. So it works out, but
they
don't
fit. Oftentimes, veterans don't find that they fit in those worlds. And it's very frustrating. They especially if they've been in combat and been on any campaigns, they don't fit.
Well, there could be some healthcare issues,
that's
mental
the drill
health.
Down, yeah. Adam. That's the drill down. The drill down would be, if you want to niche down, the drill down would be veterans who have had one or two tours in combat could potentially suffer with PTSD, how entrepreneurship could be that bridge so that they could, you know, find ways to create a business and take care of their families using that combat experience and leveraging those things. And people wouldn't think like, how could you leverage, you know, combat? How could you leverage PTSD? You could leverage it by creating an environment that is the opposite of what you experience that causes your triggers.
Ooh. Ooh, you could write a grant for that.
Yeah, you could write a grant for that.
That's pretty interesting. See, look at you. I was just talking to you and then you boom. figured it out for him.
That's the drill down right there.
He's going to have to listen to this episode. Yeah, this is good. Yeah. That's good stuff. Wow.
Well, you got me all keyed up, Adam.
I know. Now you're fired up. Yeah, see, now you're going to go off to the podcast. You're going to go figure out 10 other things probably.
Well, you know, I got a client that after this call from Germany, and he's thinking of doing something in a space. He's got all these ideas, and he was like, I really cannot drill down. Please help me drill down. So that's what I'll be talking to him about.
I love it.
After this podcast.
Yeah. I love it. Well, tell me, close things out here. What are your, I know a lot of people are interested in side hustles. I just spoke at a high school yesterday, and these kids are like, what can we do? Like, what's a side hustle we can start? And I told him a couple things that I thought were pretty cool, like selling journals on Amazon, because you don't have to write a book, but essentially you got a book up there. And people buy diaries, journals, but it's an empty book. They fill it up, you know, with information. So there's people out there making...
You know what? They could make a book or a video on how to step-by-step and do TikTok for baby boomers or people that are older than 30.
Ooh.
Because people want to get on TikTok, but they don't know how. You only got so many seconds. And what is TikTok all about? Is it about I got to get a music and I got to dance to it, or what do I got to do? And people want to get on there that's 30 or 40 and older, but they don't know how. So if they had some kind of site that people can subscribe to and get weekly lessons on how to create a TikTok, and then at the very end they have a TikTok, their very first TikTok.
That's the result.
That's the result. Like, I want to make my first TikTok. You want to know how to make your first TikTok? Subscribe to our club, and we're going to walk you through what TikTok is, how do you log on, how do you create an account, and how you create your first TikTok and how you edit it. We got 6 episodes for you. It's going to cost you $100, whatever.
Yeah.
Get on anyway, you know?
And you build that one time and you sell it as many times as you want. See, I love those kind of businesses. I love those kind of, those are great. Yeah. I try to get my trainer to do some blogging and to do some training videos online, and we could put it on there and sell it and package him up and have a set. You know, he's just like, oh no, I like my little one-on-one training sessions. But he's just, you know, He doesn't get into all the business type stuff. He's just, you know, he likes what he's doing. He's likes staying small, and that's fine too. You know, there's entrepreneurs out there that don't need to be, you know, multi-billionaires. You know, they just, he just wants to be small. He just wants to keep small. So there's people out there that just want to do that.
You say he wants to keep small. He likes being the experience of engaging with the one-on-one and seeing them evolve and improve.
Oh, I like
that
the way you said that.
Them feel better.
That's it.
That's what he likes or she likes. And so that's where they get their self-actualization from. They love that. They wouldn't give that up, because that means if everything is automated and I'm getting all the money, where am I at in the process? I'm out of the process now.
Well, if you ever talk to anybody with a lot of money, they'd tell you first thing, the money's not everything. That, you know, sometimes they don't feel fulfilled in their lives.
That's right.
So, well, Randy, I really appreciate you being on the show. This has been great.
Thank you.
I love your personality. I love everything.
I appreciate you. This has been awesome. My first podcast.
There you go.
All right.
And it's crazy all the stuff you've accomplished. Like, this is insane. Like, I if anybody's out here feeling like, you know, they got a 9-to-5 and that's it, look at Randy. Like, look at all the stuff she's done. I mean, there's time.
Well, you got 24 hours in a day. You can do what you want to do. It's just what do you want to do? And do you want to work at it? And if you don't want to do that, then you got what you got. Or wasn't it a commercial that said you get what you get, or you got what you get?
Yeah.
Something like that. That's it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, Randy, how can people reach out to you? I mean, are you available for any kind of consulting? Do you, you know, what's your link to your book? All that good stuff.
Yes, I'm available for consulting. You can reach out to me, I would say, on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. I think, do you have my links, Adam? I think that you do.
Yeah, I'll put them in the bio. Yeah.
The book is on Amazon, and it was number one bestseller in 6 categories for 5 straight days, beginning November 1st. It's on Amazon in the Kindle, as well as if people want to print it out. But yeah, Soul Seed. That's it.
Soul Seed.
Randy, I do have a website called Singletree, which is one word, singletree.media. There is a place if you want to contact me, you can contact me through there as well. Singletree.media.
Love it, Randy.
And LinkedIn.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Thanks for being on the show and enjoy the rest of your day with your German friend.
You too. All right. You're funny. Thank you so much, Adam.
All right, Randy. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of Side Hustle City. Well, you've heard from our guests. Now let's hear from you. Join our community on Facebook, Side Hustle City. It's a group where people share ideas, share their inspirational stories, and motivate each other to be successful and turn their side hustle into their main hustle. We'll see you there, and we'll see you next week on the show. Thank you. Honest.